Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
Thank you, Audible, for supporting the show, FilmSack. Audible is proud to return as the exclusive audio storytelling sponsor of the Tribeca Festival. Let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or be entertained. New members can try it for 30 days for free. Visit audible.com/TF.
Master Gregory, do you not hear the bells?
There is a ringing in my ear.
In the village, in the old church, there's a child, no more than 10 years of age. She is infected.
You may note I'm presently not dealing with the otherworldly.
You're supposed to be minding the pigs.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, and welcome to FilmSack. This is FilmSack, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind, episode 557 for Saturday, June 18th, 2022. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Where's the accent, Lebowski? Dunaway.
Oh, I lost it. So here it is. Oh, hi. This week on FilmSack, we turn on closed caption and head back to the bygone age of witch burning and killing off of characters we love too soon. No, not the bastard son of Sean Bean. Come back, Kit Harington. We need you. I can feel the dark. Oh, what a world. What a world. Anywho, wrong questions get wrong answers. Hey, can you make a bland movie with the great actors? 1 hour, 45 minutes later? Yes. Yes, you cannot. Hey, what happens when your witchy mom, who mated with a muggle at least 7 times, dies before she can say goodbye? How about an Obi Mam Kenobi force ghost visited replete with great advice like, believe in yourself, you pig farmer? Gee, thanks, ma'am. Hey, you fight me as a CGI dragon and not as a man. Have you no honor? Should have stayed a CGI dragon. Randy, ogre scrotum for your enjoyment.
Man. You got special juice when you make your things. I don't know what's going on. You're either the most
that was a lot of fun.
You're either the most chaotic brain in the room, or I don't know what to make of your intro.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insanity.
There's issues.
And one day they'll look back and go, I didn't think he was that crazy.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, may your room be padded. Let's move on now to Randy. Don't forget to pee in the fire before we break camp, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
I've come to pick up one of your offspring. I'm sure you know what sort of person I am, so you'll acquiesce to this. And if you're going to go along with me taking one of your children away without even asking to see some ID, then you'll probably take my breakfast order, no questions asked. I like my eggs scrambled and my bacon crispy. I'll also be needing some flour and grease.
grease.
Flour? I mean flour like the powdered wheat that you use to make bread. Not flour like a lily or a dandelion. Flour for bread making and grease for bread frying. I'm going to make fry bread later. You know, if you're having such a hard time understanding me, that's on you. Probably hearing loss from the fact that you've birthed 14 children over the last 15 years. Turn on the subtitles or something.
Two references to the subtitles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a bad impression, actually.
Yeah, not bad at all.
That's pretty dead on.
I felt like I was watching the damn movie again. Thanks,
yeah,
Randy.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot for that. With us finally, Brian, he's as amazing as he is ugly Ibbot.
How about one more impersonation?
Yes.
So, my apprentice, you want to know about my history with the witch Malkin? Yes, it's true. I once loved her, and in many ways, she helped me become the spook I am today. How so? Well, take my facial hair, for example. She taught me to wear my mustache and beard like this to make my enemies underestimate me, to take me for a fool so I could get the upper hand.
It's hard to hold, isn't it?
It is. It really is. I should actually, I want to put like an atomic fireball in my mouth and just kind of keep it there to...
What else? Oh, my constantly squinting eyes? Yes, that was Mother Malkin as well. She taught me that by closing my eyes to the world around me, my other senses would be able to identify dangers not limited to the visual, but also the sounds and smells around me that could pose a threat. Oh, you want to know why I talk like this? Well, I once told her that her dress made her look fat, and she knocked all my teeth out.
That explains a lot.
Now, an atomic fireball in your mouth is a funny idea. Like that, he's sucking on this one piece of like, candy the entire time,
like a lozenge. Yeah,
yeah. I think Brian's or Ibbot's text to me was why someone slapped the peanut butter out of his freaking mouth already.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this movie is a movie we watched that I've never heard of until Brian Dunaway brought it up. It is called The Seventh Son. It came out in 2015. Actually, it got delayed to release to 2015. It was supposed to come out the prior year, but is listed everywhere.
It's called Warcraft Alternative.
Yeah, Warcraft Alternative.
Can't blame that delay on the pandemic, can
we?
Right.
No, we cannot. 2015, rather, this thing came out. It's hard to believe, same year as Mad Max Fury Road, but whatever, I'll try to make it square.
Does that make you furious?
A little bit. Yes. A little bit of Furiosa in my head about it. This movie is bad, and we'll talk about why, but also perfect for Film Sack. I recommend people watch it. Do not go in thinking you're going to get something great. Go in expecting to be completely blown away about how mediocre it can be, despite the fact it has some of the greatest actors in it. It has some of the best effects work I've seen in years.
Yes and no. I feel like there was some hit or miss special effects. Like there were times it was like, oh, this is great. But then when you remember when you've got the four witches or the three witches and Chiwetel Ejiofor all heading towards the village in their little smoke trails, their little lost smoke monster trails.
It is Jaman Hansu, right?
Yeah, it is.
Jaman Hansu.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I say Chiwetel?
Yeah, Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I was trying to remember a name that I had problems pronouncing, and that was the one that came to mind.
Came to mind. Yeah.
We just call him Digimon. It's fine. That'll work.
There you go.
Yeah.
But there, you know, all those smoke trails are heading towards the village that they're about to completely destroy. And you see green screen, but you see like through the smoke, which should be semi-transparent, like opaqueness that should not be there. It completely threw me off. Right. I'm gesturing with my hands and you can't see it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And you make a good point. And the reason why is you can't blame this on the. Look, you can't blame anything. You can't blame anything on this movie other than the director, but you can say they had a lot of hiccups. And so the special effects are one of the last things done, and they kind of all ended too soon, and then they had to go back and finish it. You get what you get.
I'll tell you what, though. I like, okay, so the bear thing, transformation bear guy, played by Jason Lee, with the tiniest role he ever had in his life. Not Jason Lee. Shoot, forgot his name all of a sudden.
Jason Scottley.
Jason Scottley, not Jason Lee from My Name is Earl.
Right.
He's barely in it, but when he is in it, it becomes this transformative bear thing that is really cool. Awesome to me. The thing in the forest with all the stuff growing out of its head that's supposedly blind but has great smell.
Oh, the boggart.
That looked amazing. I thought that looked incredible. And they even blew me away a little bit with with some of the transformations. I think things are a little bit messier at the end, but overall, like effects wise, it looked good. The soundtrack was good. The actors in this are top tier. And then what do you have? You have a really mediocre
story. Is Saturday afternoon matinee at its best. This is the kind of thing that you don't mean to watch, but you're bored. It's a Saturday afternoon, and suddenly this is on. You didn't choose it. Right. It chose you, and it's like perfect.
Sure.
And you know what? If you're going to make a movie like this, you really have to pick one of two poisons. You either have to satisfy me, the fantasy viewer who wants you to explain all the things, or you have to satisfy me, the fantasy viewer who really wants to see some cool freaking dragons.
Yeah.
And this filmmaker of these filmmakers, they went with the second. They're like, you know what? We're going to, if we can't tell you, we're at least going to show you. Yeah, and I think it was the right move, but the problem is, you have to somehow do both of those things if you want to make a great fantasy movie. You have like the only way to win this little game with a audience is to not play, right? You have to and it's just like, did I really want another hour of exposition? Not really. Mm-hmm. You know, like I don't trust these guys to have, you know, to have figured out how to tell the story any better. But I would like to know what's the alternative version of this movie that doesn't have so many dragons and bears and tusks and so on, but does have some history, some layered explanations of who all these women are and what they've experienced before. You know what I mean? Because like the movie is constantly saying, here's something interesting. Trust me, it's interesting. And then moving on.
The witches were way more interesting than the Romeo and Juliet story.
They crammed
in the middle of this.
They
could have done without that.
And I usually love Alicia Vikander. I mean, again, another Academy Award winner.
Yeah.
Count all the Academy Award winners and nominees in this film. But man, was she just boring and flat and useless in this film.
Yeah, I agree.
She also teleported
too conveniently and just showed up whenever it was convenient for her to be there. And she just really, I mean, everything she did landed flat for me, whereas everything else I've ever seen her in, completely enamored with her performance. Yeah. She's like amazing. But that's kind of true across the board. Even this main dude, played by Ben Barnes as Tom Ward, who, by the way, in the book series, this is based on, very loosely based on.
This is a book series, by the way, and I want to go back and read the book thinking maybe they lost something in translation.
Oh, I guarantee they did. Like, there's no reason. I mean, it's also like 9 books or 10 books or something.
Yeah, it's like The Spook's Apprentice or something like that, so which is a much better name than Seventh Son, but I don't know how you sell that.
Yeah, they got The Spook's Apprentice, Spook's Curse, Spook's Secret. The kid's only 12 in the books. He's like a 11, 12-year-old kid. He's not like
which would have been
man.
Much better, because I felt like Ben Barnes was too old here. If for my Romeo and Juliet, I like them to be, these felt like more like college students than high schoolers.
Yeah.
So this guy, I, you know, Ben, like, by the way,
if you watch season one of Westworld, Ben Barnes, known to be the one of the designer guy, that the really a-hole British designer guy.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's carted around. It's a very different character.
I knew I recognized him. I couldn't remember I couldn't figure out what it was from. Okay.
And he is at the pinnacle of a question I have about this movie. They said to Jeff Bridges, hey, do something, you know, do whatever you want. And he just went, okay. And everybody else comes to this movie with a cool, natural, born accent. Yeah, Alicia Vikander, she's from Sweden, Gothenburg. She has an amazing Swedish accent. Ben Bards is from Britain. He has an amazing British accent. All of them have these voices.
And Julianne Moore just did her voice.
She just did her voice, But everybody else said, hey, why don't you come in here and sound like a bunch of Americans? How about that?
Yeah, I love that Jeff Bridges is in a totally different movie than everybody else. Just fan freaking fantastic.
He thinks that he's like doing the voice for a Miyazaki film or something.
And also, don't you get the feeling that they told Jeff Bridges he's the star and kind of the only thing in the movie? Like he really feels like he's gotten different instructions.
Yeah, like I think he just doesn't take them. I think he just goes, you know.
I'll bet you they pointed a dummy camera at him a lot. Like, just to get the feeling.
Keep rolling.
Yeah. It's all about you, Jeff. It's all about you. You just keep doing it.
Why am I doing so much work with the assistant director?
I actually, one of the most enjoyable pieces of this mediocre film is Jeff Bridges, me trying. It's like watching a Popeye cartoon. Yeah. It's like there's so much crap just spilling out of him. That if you just listen to that, it's actually kind of entertaining.
I mean, I will admit one weird thing that happened to me toward the end. He grew on me as the movie went along.
Yeah.
And I didn't expect that. I thought he would annoy me as much as he did in the first minutes, which he did, because I was like, come on now, what are we doing with this voice? But by the end, I was actually really invested in that character, and I actually cared. Could care less about Ben Barnes, Julianne Moore, Alicia Vikander, any of these people and their characters.
How anticlimactic was Mother Malkin's death, too? I was just it.
She's just dead.
We're done?
Yeah. She's done. What? Now you burn her. Now you set her on fire. Yeah.
I got to say, my favorite thing about this movie is that it solved the problem of having an old man fighting a lot.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly sure how they did it. I have a guess, and that is that with all of their CGI, they morphed Jeff Bridges' actual face onto the stunt double. And that really works. Because when you only ever see someone from behind and they're doing incredible things, you just slowly get the feeling, oh, I'm looking at a stunt double. Mm-hmm. Right. You know? But
they did a really good job.
Yeah. This movie, I never felt that. I actually always felt like, is Jeff Bridges in really good shape? Yeah. No, I think they actually plastered his face onto his stunt double and like let you see that. And that kind of papered over the problem.
Maybe,
right?
Yeah. Like he seemed pretty CGI ragdoll when she'd pick him up and throw him against a pillar, but
throw him across the
And there's no way you survive that. I don't care who you are.
I try not to focus on that. I'm like, oh no way, does old man Master Gregory survive? That impact.
The trick is to go limp.
Exactly. Yeah. The trick is to relax. That's why I drink so much.
I like that little fanfic right there. That's perfect.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
And of course he's the carrier of all tropes in the movie too, right? Like Jeff Bridges has to deliver the tropes. It's like he's got tropes in packages and he's delivering them to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This entire movie. And it starts with the title of the film, right?
Sure.
You need to accept this concept that there are people out there who are the seventh son of the seventh son, and those people are super powerful, like from birth.
Yeah. How ridiculous is that?
Also just living out on a lake somewhere, growing up there. And you never know when a powerful wizard's going to show up and claim them. Mm-hmm. You know?
I was so mad that his chores didn't tie into his abilities.
I
was like, I was so mad. All I did was like, the only thing he ever did at home that we saw was him bitching and spreading some feed to some pigs. So he's just a pig farmer, and I wanted to get
having a panic attack.
Yeah.
Right? I was
Wow,
this movie's recent.
Yeah, he's a bitching pig farmer. That's what he was.
I needed him to have skills from like killing womp rats or something. I needed him to have some kind of experience
wax the car kind of
something
stuff.
Something on the farm that taught him how to do it. You know,
you basically, I'll just describe the major thing here that I noticed right away is that every one of those tropes, the Luke trope, the Harry Potter trope, that everybody is a young, taking care of the farm, living a simple life, but dreams for more and is suddenly swept into a giant epic. I mean, could you have freaking done
the only thing they could have improved upon is if they had thrown the Conan trope in there and had the witches come in and kill the village he lived in so that he would have to go. But they didn't do that.
Well, even in Star Wars, they kill Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru.
That's what I'm saying. It didn't happen here.
Yeah, they didn't do it here. You're right.
The other mistrope that completely I was expecting, the fight with the Unga, the bear dude.
Oh, yes. Unga.
you know, in any other movie, they would have, like, it spared his life and then recruited him to help join them fight the witches.
Yeah. And that would have been cool.
I did like that, though.
Because if you're going to have Jason Scott Lee do shit, and wait, what's his name? That is his name, right?
Yeah, you got it.
If you're going to have him do stuff, you don't just bring him in. You have him do stuff. To have him be more than just two lines. That's terrible, right? Yeah. Maybe they had
I did
plans,
like it. It showed the, you know, it made us, it was a little character development. It didn't work very well, but, you know, we were supposed to go, okay, this is where this character is, and then this character is eventually going to get there. Oh, why don't you slap us in the face with that, too, by the way, which they did.
Right.
But these are just
He-Man. These are He-Man villains. These are He-Man henchmen is what they are.
Yeah. Like, you're right. You're right. The four-armed. All they did.
The master of swords.
Not just that. Not only are they He-Man villains, but they're introduced in the trope of the storybook that you've shown. Seriously.
How
many movies have been? And then flip to the next page, and you're going to see someone else we're going to fight later.
Right.
And that person uses swords. And then we flip to the next page. Now, this person uses red magic. Let me just tell you one thing about that, but not tell you enough.
Yeah. The guy, the multi-armed guy, being master of swords, I just about spit. I was drinking when I saw that. I'm like, really? Just because he's got a bunch of arms, he's going to be the master of swords? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Well, it's not because he's arms. Really good at them. It's just because he's got a lot
he's
of
He's got
them.
More. Yeah. Yeah, he's got two more than you do. He's four-wielding, quad-wielding. Scary.
Yeah. What's the, I'm sorry. Is it General Grievous?
Yes, who's Star Wars. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you're thinking of General. Yeah, yeah.
Greatest swordsman?
Yeah.
I love when we did that in Star Wars. Like, hey, you know what's cool? A lightsaber. You know what's even cooler? A two-edged lightsaber. You know what's even cooler than that? Like a robot, like force spinning.
Right. Well, now they've even upped it with in Clone Wars and in Star Wars Visions, and now in Obi-Wan Kenobi, we've got the dark lightsaber you hold in the center of your hand that has a rotating,
there you go, like
a propeller.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I kind of like that because that's kind of what we do in reality, right? I mean, we don't just have guns anymore. We've got guns that do, you know, crazy shit. So
bigger, better. It is natural.
Cars, all that stuff.
Forearm dude, by the way, before we get off the subject to him, that was some of the special effects that I said, okay, that's really good. You see that used in so many movies like Clash of the Titans and other movies kind of from that era and even more recent. And they never figure out how to make the arms look like they're not just going to be all stumbling all over each other all the time. And I thought with him, they actually,
they look
there's
good.
Logistics problems with forearms, right?
Yeah, it is. Four. But also it could just look like Goro in Mortal Kombat where the two at the bottom are just hanging loose like rubber.
Those vestigial appendages or whatever, the useless ones. Yeah. Is he going to find those other arms? No, those just kind of hang there.
But the
just
way the way
skin pointless. Tags with fingers.
The way this guy fought, he would grab onto a bar that like a part of a fence with one of his left hands while the other one is swinging a thing, and then the other hand would grab, you know, push a person out of the way while the other one was swinging. Like,
somebody was really thinking about it. Somebody was originally, you know, visualizing how they would be if they had four.
Yeah, that was cool. That's what I'm saying. It's like a mix of like really impressive stuff and really mediocre stuff. I'm not used
to
this.
The dragons were good. I have to keep saying that. The dragons were good. We start watching this movie. It's me and my kid. And there's a mysterious figure who's creating.
You really
prison.
Need to let your dog out, by the way.
I'm enjoying it.
Dog is.
I
really
love the fifth member of FilmSack. Go ahead.
Wanting to pee.
Sorry, go ahead.
So we start the movie. There's a mysterious figure building a prison with one person in it. All right.
Yeah.
And you realize, oh, I'll bet that's a dragon person. I'll bet that's a dragon person. Yeah. So I said to my kid, you know what we're going to have here? We're going to have the trope of you don't get to see the dragon for a long time in this movie.
Yeah.
And then immediately you get to see the dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I've taken your trope and substituted it for a different one, which is this genius witch hunter guy doesn't know about the blood moon? Does he not have an almanac? What kind of how stupid is he?
Yeah, no kidding. By the way, when we say loosely based on these books, I'll give you an example. On the Wikipedia page for the books, when the author Joseph Delaney wrote these books, he lives in Great Britain. These are well regarded. People like these books. They came out in 2004, and the last one came out the year the movie came out. Anyway,
basically, people were pissed about this movie, right?
Probably. But listen to this line. At one point, Sir Gregory, kills Tusk in a battle by stabbing him through the forehead. Hello.
Spoiler. By the way, that's like a Dobby moment. Spoiler.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like in this one, you just got this docile looking ogre guy that's just taking care of everything, and he's never.
John DeSantis, man, is He's a beast. And in this one, they played him down to be such a little, you know, a little very mousy.
Grunt.
Loved him.
Yeah, they make him. This is the guy they always hire for, like, he's Predator in a lot of the Predator AVP movies stuff. Or you hire him for giant, big, scary serial killers with masks on and stuff like that. That's kind of his job in Hollywood. But he was great.
I desperately want to tell you the name of the trope that Tusk is.
Give us Tusk trope.
Give it.
Okay. The trope is named Battle Butler.
Yes.
I love that name.
That's great.
I want a character named Battle Butler now. Just straight up support the trope.
That's a bit like Alfred in Batman, kind of, a lot of times.
He's written that
Wong,
way. Yeah.
Wong is Battle Butler.
Yeah,
Written that way. Like, a lot of times a butler is just a butler. But in this case, your Battle Butler is somebody who's also strong and powerful and can, you know, keep their mouth shut while doing your bidding.
I love how Gregory insults him constantly with all these passive aggressive, you know, you're as loyal as you are ugly and all those things make me laugh. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, some of that was pretty good. The idea that he gets passed down to the next, you know, the apprentice is now the master, and so he goes with him.
Loyal as he is ugly.
It's a fun idea, except now I read this in the book, I'm like, oh, they freaking killed him. Stabbed him in the forehead. Well, all right.
Yeah. Odd that they were stabbing the forehead. That's like if you're going to stab somebody, that's probably the place that you don't want to stab them. That's going to be tough to get through.
Oh, yeah. You got to have the right knife to make that happen. I will say this, though. Like, this is the kind of series I wouldn't mind reading. But now I don't think I want to, because the movie kind of soured me on it.
This is the payoff. This is the end. It's like, oh, no.
It just sours me to think that, you know, I don't know. Maybe the books are amazing, but I got to deal with this. I feel this way when I see a bad Crichton. Like, I don't want to read Congo. I mean, desire, even though Congo's, I hear Congo's great as a book.
Congo's great. Yeah. Let that stop you.
Did that sort of thing happen with Stephen King, by the way? You know, when some of the bad movies came out, people who would normally have read Christine or read Salem's Lot or something along those lines, would they then shy away from reading the books because, oh, man, that movie was rough?
There's two ways that can go. If the movie was rough, then that reason. Sometimes if the movie is good, you're like, well, I've just seen it, so why would I read it? So I think there's some of that. But in Stephen King's case, I think it is true for me because I didn't read Tommyknockers. The version of the movie for that was horrendous.
Mm-hmm. There's also the opposite problem, which is not a bad problem to have, right? So Rita Hayworth and Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah.
Rita Hayworth.
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 Yeah.
Hayworth. Hayworth.
Brain.
Hayworth.
Hold on. Let me get my money back from my rented brain. You shouldn't read that. Like, it's fine.
I did.
But Shawshank Redemption is such a great film because of all of the stuff, because of what you see, what you hear, right?
Yeah.
The pacing.
It's better than the book.
So you don't need to go read that short story. It's fine. You're fine.
Yeah, no, I agree.
It is a short story, so, you know, why not? Just do it.
To me, it's the same problem I had with Philip K. Dick's Dreams of Electric Sheep, or whatever the hell the whole title goes.
I'd seen
Blade Runner before that, and I thought the book was, like, really boring. I didn't like it.
And it's kind of obtuse. Yeah, the books, now, with Philip K. Dick, it's a little bit different, because for some reason, his material makes really good action movies, but reading is kind of dry. And But I guess you could say the same thing about Crichton, too, because Jurassic Park, watching, fun. Reading the book, also fun, but in a different way.
Yeah.
A lot more dry.
Right. Yeah.
A lot more science.
Sure. And that's fine. Look, I'm fine with those two worlds coexisting. It's just, when it's such a bomb.
Yeah.
What was the one a few years ago with Jeremy Irons that was about the dragons that the relatively young kid wrote those books is kind of considered a...
I know what you're talking about. Dragon. Is that Dragon title, right?
Aragorn. Yeah. Aragorn, whatever it was.
Gorn.
This movie is that, by the way. this is the perfect parallel to that. A book that everyone regarded well that made a really bad movie after.
I just want to applaud Brian Dunaway's connection to the old Calgon commercials with Aragorn. I just want to make sure that doesn't go by.
Somebody make a note. That's pretty good.
I read Aragorn and what's the next one? Brisinger, I think.
Yeah.
I read those books before they were movies. Like, I remember when they came out. And everybody was like, you've got to read this thing because it was written by a teenager. You're going to be amazed at this written by a teenager.
He's a homeschooled teenager.
And then I read it and I'm like, this feels like it's written by a teenager. Like, I'm not saying it was bad. It was not bad by any stretch. I enjoyed the books and the concepts. It was very, you know, thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. It's Aragon too, by the way. I think I keep leaning towards the Aragon, but it's Aragon.
Not Aragorn to be, you know, there's, it's a little,
but it wasn't like important, these books. No. And so like when the movie came out and it wasn't good and I watched it and it wasn't good, like maybe we should film sack it. I don't know.
I would, but I would love, cause I never watched or read any of it.
I saw it in theaters. It's bad. It's really bad. Yeah. But it's, it was like, it's this, it's exactly this. It's exactly the same feeling. You walk away from it going, oh, that was very mediocre with some moments of that had potential, but, and look at these amazing actors, but somehow it's still shit. It's the exact same. If we watch it, it's like doing this over again. Same.
Yeah. So like my comparison there is that with The Stand, like you read that book and it's fine.
Five times over. I love that book. I love
it. It's fine. Yeah, it's fine. It's a good book. But then you watch any version of The Stand and it will make the book worse for you.
I think it's the other way around. I think the 90s thing with Lieutenant Dan,
Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise, it was fine, but it was nowhere near as good as the book, and it actually drove me to want to read the book again. The new thing I haven't even seen because I just know it's not going to do it justice. So I feel the opposite with that one. Every time somebody tries to do something with The Stand, it just makes me want to read The Stand again because I love The Stand.
I think I think I've protected myself a long time ago, and I isolate both books and movies from each other. It's probably a, you know, maybe it's protection because I've seen so many of my beloved books turn into shit films.
Yeah.
And so I can't say I relate the two. Like The Seventh Son has no effect on whether I'll read the series or not on the book.
That's probably good. That's a healthy way to do it. Cause I'm missing out. Maybe this whole series is amazing and you know, I like good fantasy. Why wouldn't I like it? I just meant this really soured me on like, would I really?
Yeah. Because I do know what you mean though, because you'll be, if you do read the book, there'll be a part in the book where you'll refer back in your mind and go, oh,
yeah,
this guy looks like Jeff Bridges.
And keep in mind, this author is working in the same zone as the Harry Potters of the world and the all those other books that came out after. This is, you know, young adult fiction.
This is 2 years after Game of Thrones started with Kit Harington. And why we just didn't keep Kit Harington the whole
8 minutes. He was in there for eight minutes and he got top billing. He was the third billed person. I couldn't believe it.
Just keep Kit Harington. We don't need Tom Ward. We could have. We don't need Ben Barnes. We could have flipped a little bit.
Yes.
How great would this movie have been if everyone in the movie was from Game of Thrones?
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah. I was trying to. The only person I'm having.
Who would be your Gregory?
Charles Dance.
Charles Dance.
Okay.
I don't know.
How great would that have been?
I don't know. Think I was kind of. I got weird at the end and was kind of. I got ended up getting sold on Jeff Bridges and I don't know why.
I like it. I'm with you. With Charles I like Dance, the character.
Though, you know, you'd believe some of this, the you know, hard-hearted stuff he did, killing the bear guy, killing his apprentice who was stuck in the cage with Julianne Moore at the beginning. I could see that. That kind of does work for me.
Yeah, I think you should just win. I think you should have went.
He's got a British accent already.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Well, no, they would have made in this movie, they would have made him just talk like us because that's what they made all the British people do. So lame.
I think you should just brought Sean Bean in. He wasn't doing anything. He was already dead in Game of Thrones. Have him as Gregory.
There you go. There you go.
I'm just like saying, like, keep Kit Harington exactly where he is. Only when Gregory goes to find the next apprentice, it's Nicolaj Coster-Waldau, right?
Yeah.
Like 7 years ago, right?
It's only going to be Game of Thrones people we're going to put in here. Is that the
plan? Yeah, we're just putting Game of Thrones
people. All right.
Like Brian said, you know, if you read a book, if you read a book after you saw a movie, right?
Yeah.
There's a thing that happens. Like for all the people who watched Game of Thrones and then went and read Song of Ice and Fire, they have Peter Dinklage in place of Tyrion Lannister. And in the books, Tyrion Lannister is not at
nothing
all
like Peter Dinklage.
Dinklage, right?
Yeah. I disagree. Like, I guess he's a little person. I guess you're right. That's the same. They're both little. Yeah.
There's only one dimension to this character.
No, you're totally right.
About.
You're totally right. Height. I keep saying the comics. That's so stupid. In the books, he's very like, oh, hello. And he's like a little more, he's just a little bit more of like a little pompadour.
Man, you can't suppress Peter Dinklage and his Dinklishness. He's just,
yeah, he's going
to
be
to his character. Every character. I mean, it's just Peter.
I will say, though, I prefer the Dinklage.
One of the greatest actors of our time, by the way.
Yeah, I love him. He's great.
But just imagine this movie, Seventh Son, with Lena Headey as the main instead of Julianne Moore. And, oh gosh, what's her name? Gwendolyn Christie as the older woman, right?
Yeah.
And then, like,
Phantasma.
You take your dragon queen chick and make her the girlfriend.
Emily Clark, or Sophie Turner. Sophie Turner could also be the young one.
Yeah,
it would have been so great. Why didn't they do this?
Yeah, Sophie Turner looks like she looks like she's always making a call for help that no one recognizes right now.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't explain it. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that Jonas brother she's married to. I'm sure he's fine. Right. But every time I see a photo of them,
twice if you're okay,
yeah, I get this just weird vibe. I can't explain it. And I don't know why, it's probably all in my own head. But when I see her, I just go, somebody help her. Something's wrong. Yeah. I don't know what, but get in there. Jonas, out of the way, Jonas, brother.
Just imagine if the other dude shows up and it's Richard Madden, like Rob Stark. Oh, yeah. The other dude.
I like that guy. Mm-hmm. Oh. I like them all.
See, all that would have been great.
This recast is good.
Jason Momoa could have been the leader of the ghouls.
Leader? Yeah. Is that what the one? By the way, another special effects shout out here. I thought the ghasts in this were badass.
I love the ghast.
Yeah. And I wish they'd played more because I wanted him to really upset a ghast. I'm assuming it's in the book. He was warned not to F with the ghast. Mm-hmm. And I was really hoping one was going to come get him later. Yeah. Instead, we got that fire cell attendant was in the hall.
He got a lot of warnings. Like, it was... That montage of him in one night learning everything he needed to learn.
That kind of bothered me as well. I mean, there needed to be some explanation for his supernatural abilities. Because, I mean, he pretty much came in not able to do anything. And there was never any type of ramp up. You know, there wasn't like, you know, a year on Dagobah or something. There was just nothing. It was just... Here I am, 5 minutes later, a week later, I'm doing all the amazing things. That bothered me.
It bothered me a little bit too, but what are you going to do? I don't know.
I was going to say, I put this in our chat, but do we have an IMDb photo of the week? Because I'm going to nominate John DeSantis, who we talked about a minute ago.
Yes, it's plays Tusk.
Yeah.
Because his photo looks like it's like that famous drawing of Captain America by Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, it's totally Rob Liefeld, dude.
Yeah, he can play that. He should be the Captain America that I want. He's the Captain America I want. Yeah.
Everybody else is too normal. Jeff Bridges just looks like a badass. Digimon Hansu looks great. And, you know, none of these people. Yeah. I feel a little bad for Gerald Plunkett, who played the Inquisitor, because what an underwritten character. You're supposed to hate that guy, and I get it, but you're just not doing enough. And then when he finally got killed, I'm just like...
Yeah, he was like randomly on the street, right? Because that's how we got rid of the Inquisitor. I'm like, what was he doing? He was just... He should have been his Inquisitor mobile. What's going on?
His Inquisitor mobile?
What is going on?
I also don't think of... I have the wrong picture in my head when I hear Inquisitor. I think of Warhammer 40K Inquisitors, which are super cool and dark and trippy.
I think of Obi-Wan.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's true.
Yeah, I like that too. But that's actually a similar vibe, and I like that vibe. When they're just fastidious freaking government people, who gives a shit? That's boring.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Inquisitor.
Ooh, the Grand Comptroller.
Yeah.
I think we have a chick in the bucket for this film, too.
What? Oh, my gosh. Hold on. I'm going to play it.
Let me think.
I haven't played this in so long.
I know some chicks in the bucket. Go ahead.
It's been a bit since we've done this.
Don't you know it's dangerous to leave a bucket lying around?
All right. Who we got?
The fisherman who's on the boat when the boggart jumps down, who is not only flung off the boat, but flung completely out of the film.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
The flinging just keeps going on and on. He just keeps flying along.
Yeah.
Master Gregory's horses also disappeared. He made a great point to that they came back the first time, but the second time after the boggart, no.
Yeah, they were gone. The horses were no more. But yeah, that guy, that poor fisherman guy. I mean, I assume he's dead, right? That's the idea.
He could have swam. I mean,
yeah,
yeah.
That was one of the best scenes in the whole movie. I think them being because they broke the trope because they're running, they jump in the water. Don't worry, he's not going to jump in the water.
Boggarts don't like water. They'll be fine.
Here he comes.
Yep,
It's right.
And only and not, when I saw that, I went, oh, they spent the extra cash on this because you got underwater CGI to worry about where he's holding the dude. It's hard. Well, that's cheap.
For sure.
Yeah. I like that. That whole scene was good. See, this is the thing. It's littered with these moments of like, hey, that's cool. I like that. And then, ooh, what are we doing? Like,
Boy, it is all up in here how Canadian this movie is.
Yeah.
Like the every scene you see outside, I'm like, oh, that's where they film Lake Placid. Oh, look at that. That's the inlet next to Seashell, BC. Like, geez, this movie is so freaking British Columbia. Like all the, if you'd look down the cast list, all of the like extras, not extras exactly, like they, some of them have names and some of them even have lines, but like they are all Canadian. They're all from Victoria and Vancouver and Alberta.
Well, plus that's where, oh no, that's not true. They filmed in Ireland and somewhere else for where Harrington was. There was this whole story behind why he was only there for 10 minutes. And it was, well, they're between filming. He's like this sudden star. Like, this is a real get for us. So let's get him in for a hot minute. We have to give him third billing, but, you know, he'll be dead in 10 minutes. Like,
it was totally worth it, man. I had forgotten I'd seen this movie. And as you can guess, it's not hard to forget this movie because there's really no standout moments. It feels like a bunch of other movies you've already seen. So, but I was about a good 30 minutes into it. I'm like, wait a minute. I've seen this movie.
What is it most like we've seen? Probably Dragonheart or something. It's a lot.
It's
like
kind of
that.
Dragonheart-ish, yeah. That's a good comparison.
Of all the fantasy based stuff we've seen, I feel like Dragonheart, maybe that old one with Rutger Hauer and
right. And, it feels like Ferris Van Bueller. Helsing to me.
Oh, Van Helsing. But yeah, that's another great example.
Another good comparison.
Yeah. One that's a movie that I went to going, man, this is going to be awesome. Wolverine's in this. We got that lady I like. It's going to be great. Let's do this.
It's going to be great.
And instead.
It's okay.
Just walked out going, well, that was probably not worth the $30 we spent at the theater today, but
right.
Oh well.
Like I said, Saturday afternoon matinees, this is what these movies were made for.
Why
not really,
can't they
this is $100 million.
Why can't they
budget?
Get it right though? You know what I mean? Like why does this seem so hard for Hollywood to get fantasy, big epic fantasy done right without being Lord of the Rings or something? Which I'm still surprised
what they did
that
wrong.
Worked.
This starts in the script. This movie starts the script and it fails from that point because they didn't give us enough time with any character. You didn't feel attached to any character because we were jumping around between characters. We were never like inside the mind of the character or felt really close with the character. We were always at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And that's not what this movie is about. This movie is about a journey and we should be, you know, we should be hugging these guys. We should be emotional like Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. But we didn't get any of that. And so we feel uninvested.
IMDb has a list of what it thinks are the best fantasy movies ever made. The top three are obvious. That's Lord of the Rings, Fellowship, Return of the King, and Two Towers in that order. Mm. So a little, it's actually my order as well. I go Fellowship, then Return, then Two Towers. Anyway, Game of Thrones they have listed, but that's TV, so I'm not going to count it. Then they have Princess Bride, Labyrinth, Willow. See, I think Willow is kind of bad.
Willow is bad, but is also really good. I mean, there's a lot of aspects of it that are, like you said, really bad. But there's other parts that really make you have emotions and feelings for the characters.
I'm more excited about the really reboot important. Of that as a series on Disney Plus than I was about the movie itself. Because the movie itself, I walked away feeling a bit like I did with this one. Just under-realized, overly produced, but not enough thought went into like story and scope and character. And maybe fantasy, epic fantasy deserves television. Maybe that's the answer.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It has a lot in the past. You're right.
No.
Yeah.
Chronicles of Narnia is on here. That King Arthur movie no one liked is somehow on here. All the Harry Potter movies are on here.
Somehow. I don't know how they get it.
I don't know. This list is weird because like Army of Darkness is on here. I mean, that's a...
Yeah.
It's set in a fantasy realm, but I don't know if I'd call that...
I would. He's kind of thrown into an alternate... dimension, right? Or is it a different time? I'm not really sure. I feel like that's dark.
But here's more of them, like Golden Compass, Maleficent. These, all those Chronicles of Narnia movies, they all felt like this did to me.
Maleficent is less. It's too magical. I don't think that really falls into.
It falls into the problem, is what I'm saying. It's the same problem I have with these other movies. They're all kind of bad, and I don't know why. Like Lord of the Rings got it. The Hobbit tried again and couldn't even do that. I think that just speaks to how hard this is.
It's hard. It's hard because fantasy is born of written fiction, and a lot of the themes in fantasy from books going back 100 years are in your head. there, it's really, really hard to realize and see what you want to see when you, when you have read The Hobbit seven times as a child, and then you go and put something on the screen. Everybody's got different conceptions of that. And everybody's got a different idea of what the magic looked like and sounded like and so on. And what was in your head is better. It's going to be better than what anyone can put on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the reason why Tolkien he got it. He wrote such a deep lore, because fantasy usually to me plays best if it plays as like a historical piece, almost like this actually existed and there were these creatures, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think that works, whereas this one's just kind of like all over the place. Yeah, there's witches and spooks and this is a land of fantasy.
Listen to this. This is going to blow your mind. Rotten Tomatoes list of top, let's do top 10 here, fantasy films of all time. They're basing it on rating, right? Because that's what Rotten Tomatoes does. Nobody's making the decision. They're just basing it on rating. But decisions. Wizard of Oz, 1939 is number one.
Yes. And stop right there. Stop right there. The Wizard of Oz really set us up for failure, right?
Right.
Because it is a really good movie, but it's also ridiculous. It is absolutely these four people skipping along on a golden street.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Do you, like, if we were doing analyze it like we do other movies, put it under the same microscope without all the nostalgia and
no one had seen it? If no one in the world had seen this and it came out now and we were film sacking it, right?
Yeah,
we would have a really hard time with the fact that it's so well made, it's so well crafted, so beautiful and wondrous, and it's freaking ridiculous.
Yeah. Star Wars is like that. We'd say that about that if that came out today. I think the original. Or I've always said, and I truly believe this, I'll say this to my grave. If Star Wars didn't have John Williams, number one, and instead went with some 70s synthy sci-fi soundtrack. And if they didn't have the incredible sound work by what's his name? I always forget his name. His sound effects stuff. I can't remember his name. Is that his name? That might be his name. Anyway, those two factors, I think, are responsible for most of why Star Wars succeeded. Special effects, yes, they were also pretty groundbreaking at the time. But I think without those two other elements, I think nobody gives a shit about Star Wars.
I think if you take away lightsabers, Star Wars doesn't exist.
I think you're probably right, but also if you take away the awesome sound work with lightsabers, then no one cares about lightsabers. Like, I know it's a bit of a stretch for some people to hear this, but I am telling you, imagine that, you know, I'd love one of these days. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make an edit of New Hope, but put a replacement soundtrack that's synthy and terrible and sound effects that are shit and cheesy, like everything else was in the 70s. And if we match those up with other 70s sci-fi, it's not the phenomenon it is today. It is not the juggernaut it is today.
I'm watching Star Wars A New Hope objectively. When I would go back and watch it, I'm like, it's just not, to me, it's just not that great of a movie. But it means something to me. It means something to me.
Well, of course it does.
I can't deny it.
You can't deny it. But I'm just saying, if you take any of the Star Wars stuff and remove that element, like, think about what ties all the new stuff together and makes it work. Well, part of it is nostalgia, but a huge part of it is that consistency of epic scoring, amazing sound work, groundbreaking special effects. If you don't have those three elements, the stories really aren't that great. They're fine.
I feel like this is a cheat, though. You're like saying, you know, the dark, if you take The Dark Knight and you have it directed by Martin Scorsese, it's not as good.
No, it's not, like, I don't think that's the same because we're talking about, I'm talking about an actual tangible element that it didn't, when that movie came out, nobody was scoring anything with orchestration like and nobody was doing sound work. I mean, that was utterly mind-blowing sound work in that movie. And I just don't think it jumped the way it jumped without it, or it wouldn't have.
I'm just saying, everyone who was involved in any great movie, like the greatest movies that have ever been made, anyone involved in there gets some credit for, you know, for the, like, you know, John Travolta gets some credit for Pulp Fiction. This is the thing I've been saying. Like, I realize that you want to say, oh, Samuel L. Jackson gets all the credit for Pulp Fiction, but no, everybody involved played a part, right, in making it great.
Yeah, Even that dude with ball in his mouth. What's his name?
Bruce Willis.
No. We got the meats.
Vig Rames.
Yeah, because he's got the meats now. Would he have the meats without the ball in the mouth? I don't think so.
Yeah, so I agree with you. I'm just saying it's not fair to go to any great movie and start taking away elements.
No, I agree. I just all I'm really saying is that science fiction in the 70s, 60s and 70s was really in a zone, and this broke out of the zone in very important specific ways, and I think those three ways are crucial. Without them, you've got nothing. You just have a plain story with a bunch of actors that are fine, but no one knew them then. Like it just wouldn't have done what it did. And you can argue.
I really want to agree with you. And we've been agreeing on this point for the entirety of FilmSack going back many, many years. I want to agree with you that there are some great films that are great because of the script. And there's some great films that are great in spite of the script.
There you go.
Or despite the script. And it is it's up to you to make that judgment, right? You can say, this is great.
It's very individual. It's very individual for sure.
A movie like Spirited Away, you can't imagine that movie having a lesser script. Does that even mean? Right. Mm-hmm. There's just no, it's a great film because of the script and only the script really. Right.
Yeah.
Whereas a great movie like, Interstellar, right? Like you're like, probably could have been better written. Yeah. there are some spots.
I think I need to watch Interstellar again because it's come up so often, both on FilmSack, but also I think it came up a couple times on TMS. It's come up a lot recently, and I watched it. I kind of wrote it off as like, all right, saw it, meh.
There's also the subject of the script and the script, right? There's the script that you're hearing as dialogue that people are saying, and then there's all the rest of it. There's all this other stuff, right?
Was that one of the ones that was listed in your list that you did for the bonus episode, right?
Yes. Yeah. When I sat down at it, I was like, all right, what's the best Christopher Nolan film? Ooh, that's hard. Oh, it's so hard.
It is
but
hard.
I went with Interstellar for myself, and then I was really, really pleased to find it in the IMDb top 30 or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I really liked Interstellar a lot. And I think I'm just a sucker for sci-fi in a way that you can get away with a lot more. Whereas I feel like with fantasy, you've got to do more to earn it. And I think that's just a me thing.
Right.
But you've really got to earn it, and whatever that means.
Because it's not based in science, right? So with fantasy, you can do anything you want, but it better have reason for why you're doing it.
Very good. Well said.
Oh, this crystal just gave us all the powers we needed to fight the last battle and we win. But
That's never enough. It's got to be more than that. You're absolutely correct with that summation. I haven't been able to put it in words, but that is really it. And so, this movie, Seventh Son, does a whole lot of that. It's like, oh, well, you got the amulet. Well, okay, great. Now you're awesome. But what does that mean? What does that even do? What is it?
Yeah.
Like they don't really get into that. So I don't like mysterious object gives everyone all the power. I like when... It amplifies
the witch's powers, right? That's kind of the whole rub, but it also does other things too, like it protects him or something.
Makes him stronger or better.
It's Superman's, Superman's limitless new powers whenever he
needs
one.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that, exactly. When you rip your logo off and throw it at a guy.
I love it.
Right.
You're playing with fire.
Greatest movie moment in cinema.
I'm like, and I just like, I can't let go of this concept here about, what was this movie missing or what could it have been and so forth, because you have to make big changes, right? You can't just like, I wish the props like that amulet had been something else. Like you have to ask yourself, what would this movie have been like if it was written by Francis Ford Coppola and if it was directed by Milos Forman and if it was starring the people from Game of Thrones, like those kinds of things. And then you're like, but no, why doesn't anybody make that movie? I need an answer to that question.
Yeah.
The movie I just described, why isn't anybody trying to do that?
This thing had $100 million budget in 2014 money. I don't understand. I would have taken a lot less special effects and a better rewrite, and I would have enjoyed this movie a lot better. Mm-hmm. There's no special effect in this film that made me go, yeah, I'll take that over a better script.
No, I agree. Yeah, nope. Yeah, I agree. It doesn't work that way, right? Like, you can't, I don't think it can be everything. Now, you know, Randy made the point earlier that, you know, a bad script or you can be a good movie despite its script. I do think it's possible, but it's rare and you're playing with fire. So try, you know, you got to have more. You just got to have more. And a part of it is, I don't think you can take a 12 book series and cram it into a single film. That's a mistake. And then you might say, well, no, they set it for a sequel. Him and Tusk off into the, you know, to the next adventure. Yeah, but you already effed with the story so much. Tusk is dead in that original book. Like, what are you even doing? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. I wanted to like this more than I liked it, but I have a feeling in 5 years we're gonna have these conversations like, did we already sack that? I think we did.
Right.
Because it's one of those, right? It's just one of those. Yeah. But look, if you got a decent sound system at home and a good screen, and you're all gathered around the couch and you crank that volume up on a Friday night and you got some kids around, that's going to be a good time. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because there are some things to like in this movie.
Yeah.
Like there are definitely some fun moments. There's a, you know, there's a mystery here to be solved. There's a lot of like adventurous action, like just flat out, you know, like running through forests and swinging swords at things, you know?
Yep.
Like there's a lot to like. I think you can make that case that it should be watched.
I think so.
Anything gross you out, Scott?
No, other than I had a constant feeling through the entire thing that I would not want to be in front of Jeff Bridges while he's talking.
There's a lot of spitting when he talks.
Yeah. Like I might catch a lot of that, or it would be really weird breath or something. Like something about all of that just made me kind of sit back a little more than I would be used to or whatever. Sure. Other than
Jeff Bridges and Ben Barnes have a lot of shots where they are nose to nose. Oh, yeah. Like, you are sharing breath right there, buddy.
You are, for sure. And who knows what that even means. And you know, I almost did. It was so late, I couldn't do it. But I almost turned right around and watched that new Hulu movie. Or maybe it's a series. I think it's a movie called The Old Man. And it's
the new one with Jeff Bridges.
Yeah, and Jeff Bridges, first thing he's done since his cancer stuff.
Right.
Which is in remission, which is great. But anyway, I almost went and watched that because I just kind of wanted a palate cleanser of like, let me see Bridges in his real form, because I hear that's really good, that movie.
It's a series.
Oh, is it a series? Oh, that's even better. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah, they just dropped the second episode.
Okay, cool. I need to watch that. It was an FX thing. Anyway, I almost did that and I didn't do it because I love Jeff Bridges. And we're talking about, you know, this 2010, he did True Grit, a freaking amazing film. I could watch it over anytime, anywhere, any place. I just love it so much. And then he went on to a stretch of four in a row fantasy films. Let me read those for you or tell you what they were. This is really odd to me. So you go from Oscar run thing right there, right, in 2010, and then you go straight into, let me move up here. So this is crazy. He goes from Tron Legacy to True Grit. Then he goes Tron the next day, which he was just a voice in. Then Pablo, RIPD, which was that weird Kevin, what's his
also
name?
Also a fantasy movie.
Yeah, a fantasy movie. The Giver, to See Beyond. The Giver itself is just that was a short, and then there was The Giver. That's another fantasy movie based on some book. Seventh Son, The Little Prince, and then Hell or High Water. It's like he had this break of like, I'm going to be a bunch of fantastical Gandalfs, and then I'm going to stop and be, I'm going to be a sheriff again in High Water, which was an amazing film. If you haven't seen 2016's Hell or High Water, you're missing out on life. That's an incredible movie. Yeah. I can't believe that was just a year after this came out. But and then since then, what do you do? Kingsman, The Only Boy in New York. I didn't see that. Bad Times at the El Royale. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. And then The Old Man.
And The Old Man stars John Lithgow. And I immediately went to IMDb to find out if John Lithgow is credited in every episode. Mm-hmm. And for reasons. There's reasons you'll understand. Yeah. And they haven't listed credits. They're keeping it a secret.
Oh, smart.
How many episodes each of the different actors are in.
Interesting.
So I'm like,
Bill Heck is in this. I like Bill Heck.
All right.
Cool. I'm excited about this. This is like, he's an old retired CIA freaking sniper spy guy. I'm all yes. in. I'm all in whatever this is.
Yes, all of that and something else.
Okay. And boy, are they getting old. Look at these two. Lithgow and Bridges, man.
Speaking of Interstellar, John Lithgow right there.
Yeah. All right. Oh, yeah, that's right. He was his dad in Interstellar.
Yes,
right?
And he's the best thing in the movie.
He's very good in it, yeah. Yeah, he's also the best thing in the first Planet of the Apes reboot. He played the dad who was just hitting, who was starting to have dementia or something. And it's a really understated performance. It's really quite good. Of those three movies, it's the least good movie, but it's his performance is really good. Anyway, whatever. Lithgow's a national treasure. What are we even talking about here? He's great. He is. All right. You guys got anything else before we move on to the sound stuff?
I wrote down Blood Cakes, Blood Moon. They really dipped into that well a lot, but that's about the only other note that we haven't covered.
Well, apparently the Blood Cakes was a huge part of the book on this Wikipedia thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they did all kinds of things with the Blood Cakes. And this felt like fan service where they're just like, hey, you guys read the book? Check it out. We got Blood Cakes. Yeah. I think that's what that was. Also, the mom who played Alicia Vikander's mother is the actress is only 7 years older than Alicia Vikander. So there's that.
Yeah.
Whereas Olivia Williams, who played the mother who gave birth to seven sons.
Yeah.
Man, what is she? She is so freaking good in this. She's the best thing in the movie.
She's good in everything, and she is slumming it here.
Yeah. It's like the script doesn't have anything for her. Yeah. She just needs to look quizzically at Jeff Bridges. Like, come on. Movie.
I did like how Digimon Hansu had Kratos blades. That was cool. Whipping those out.
And crazy eyes. Boy, did this movie find Jaimon Hansu's crazy eyes.
Yeah.
I was scared of that guy.
Yeah. For everyone at home, it's Digimon. That's how we pronounce it here. It's Digimon. Randy's actually got the correct one, like his birth pronunciation, but we like to say Digimon here. Gotta catch
him. I'll have you know, I looked it up before the recording.
Oh, very nice.
I did not want to make any mistakes with Jaimon Hansu's pronunciation.
I'm just going to say Digimon for the rest of my life. There's just no getting around it. Audible is great. You already know this, but Audible is proud to return as the exclusive audio storytelling sponsor of the Tribeca Festival. That's awesome. So to kick it off, Audible will be hosting the world premiere of The Big Lie. It tells the incredible true story of Salt of the Earth, a 1950s pro-union film that suffered a conspiracy of active sabotage efforts from the U.S. government, Hollywood studio system, Howard Hughes even, during the Red Scare. But that's not all you have to be excited about with Audible, of course. Audible offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases, celebrity memoirs, mysteries, thrillers, motivation, wellness, business, more. You'll discover exclusive audio originals from the Audible Original Selection. These come from top celebrities, renowned experts, exciting new voices in audio. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep you super entertained. And you get that from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. All Audible members get access to a growing selection of audiobooks, Audible Originals, which is awesome, and podcasts that are included with membership. You can listen to all you want and get more added every single month. Nothing but good things to say about the way the Audible app works and the service. It's where I get all my science fiction and fantasy needs taken care of. I love it. So let Audible help you discover new ways to laugh, be inspired, or be entertained. New members can try it free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/TF. That's audible.com/TF to try Audible for free for 30 days. Once again, audible.com/TF. With just a good looking pan. All right, well, let's get to some clips here. We got some clips that I gathered throughout the film.
Okay.
And as you might be aware, they're not where they're supposed to be. Give me one moment here. I usually have these right where they need to be, and for some reason I don't. But anyway, these were gathered based on mostly Jeff Bridges sounding weird. So don't that going into it. Here is this.
My only oath is to this stool.
What did he say?
My only oath is to this stool.
To the stool.
Got my it. Only stool. Oath is to this stool.
Stew.
Stool. The stool he's sitting
stool.
on.
Stool. I thought he was eating stew.
I mean, that's just, wow. It's like your opinion, man. All right, here's the next one. him. Oh, with a nice thish at the end.
How long has she been like this?
Thish.
How long has she been like this?
She likes boys.
Oh, a boy. I like boys.
Shut your eyes.
Shut your eyes, Mary.
Shut your eyes.
Don't look at it. Okay. Supposed to be minding the pigs.
You're supposed to be minding the pigs.
Oh, yeah. I used that at the top of the show. Let's see. Oh, the whole seventh son of the seventh thing and the sons of the sons of the seventh son. Here you go.
I understand there's a seventh son of a seventh son that lives here. Do not say there's not, for I know that there is. I'm in a hurry.
I got you. You know what? I grew to like it. I don't know why I grew to like it, but by the end, I liked his character. I don't know.
Yeah.
At first, I hated it. At first, I was like, oh, don't do this. This is bad. And then by the end, I was like, no, I think I'm down.
I just love that scattered out all over the countryside are these women who've given birth to a bunch of babies, and he has to go find another one. 3 weeks later, oh, lost that one. I got to go find another seventh son.
Plus, there was indication that she had some daughters. She had at least the one that was complaining to her brother about pigs. Man,
yeah, she's just a little baby farm is what she is.
Where's the dad? He was a gypsy. That's what they
said.
The
muggle? That's a good question. I don't know where the muggle lives.
They said he was a gypsy, and you know how gypsies are. Or I'm sorry, the Armani, not Armani.
Yeah, he's a muggle gypsy.
Romani, not Armani.
Or the Armani, the well-dressed travelers.
I would have loved it if at the end of this movie, right, they have the parting scene, right, and Jeff Bridges is about to go off and right away, and now you're taking up the wizard hut, right?
Yeah.
I would have loved it if Jeff Bridges had said, hurry up and start making babies. Yeah. I need you to make sure you have at least seven boys that live.
Yeah. And if you have girls in between, hurry up on the next one because we need seven sons. That's the rule.
Right.
Compliments to the cook.
My compliments to the cook.
Oh, you swallow all your food, dude.
So my much compliments spit to the cook. Coming out of his mouth, I know. Right there.
Oh, can you imagine? Ugh. Okay, that's what grossed me out.
Okay, but he didn't actually have the only thing in his mouth is his tongue. This is Jeff Bridges.
I think he had an atomic fireball in there.
I think he was eating.
My compliments to the cook.
He was like mouthful of bacon grease or whatever he was doing there.
That's what he needed more grease for, huh? Okay.
Okay. So some audio from Brian's mom, from Ibbot's mom. Great. She's probably embarrassed by this one because I think this was her advice to you before you went on the date about always wearing a condom or something.
Okay. All right. Sure.
So here's what she said.
Wear it. Always.
Okay. That's good advice, I think. Always wear the condom. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Wear it. Sure.
Have it on all the time. Like not just regular part of the day.
Wear two. And just like Dennis Miller says, wear two and then rip one off so that you still have one on.
Yeah.
Did Dennis Miller say that? I've never heard him say that.
Yeah. Dennis Miller said that in one of his bits. He's like, yeah, I wear two during my daily life. Then when I'm ready to have sex, I take one off and I feel like I'm a madman.
Wow. You know, I saw him on that. Well, we all did, or at least you and I did when we saw that documentary about George Carlin. I was surprised how much Dennis Miller was in that documentary. That surprised
me.
Yeah. They didn't interview him, but they just had him like in a lot of spots. That was weird.
Right.
All right. Here you go. Here's some effing witches.
There are witches that need killing. Witches.
He got to swear. Got the one F bomb.
I love that. I love they allowed him to say that face in the other direction just so they get their PG-13 in there. Mm-hmm. Just that one F bomb.
Yep. Because they can do one.
And walks off.
Yep. They know the rule.
Well, and you can, and also he's facing away. You can drop the line entirely.
That's true.
Yeah. Smart.
That's true. You could have somebody else do it. Actually, you could have either you or Ibbot do it today because you both convinced me that that voice is doable by anyone, anytime they need to do it. So well done. All right, here's one about good aim.
Good aim.
I was aiming for your head.
Missed. Missed.
Missed. Here's your ogre scrotum.
Ogre scrotum. For your own enjoyment.
Yeah, for your own enjoyment. That's pretty good. Let's see here. Who does this remind us all? Someone tell me who this voice is, because it reminds me of somebody who is not this actor. Normally he's British and talks in a British accent, so for the life of me, I can't think of it, but just listen to this and try to clear your head and imagine who might be saying this.
You know, I've seen Mother Malkin in my visions. It's going to take a lot more than salt and iron to defeat her.
Why is that so familiar?
Okay, I've got this. Know. Hold on. I've got this.
Like a MCU character or Spider-Man or...
No, MCU.
Who, though?
Bear with me.
Is it Chris?
Nope. No. No.
It's not.
No.
It's not Star Lord.
No.
Hold on. Play a little bit of it again.
You know, I've seen Mother Malkin in my visions.
Why is that so familiar?
I don't know.
It bugged me the whole movie because I kept saying, because it was contrasting itself with itself. It was like a voice of someone I know, but it's not that actor, and I don't know who it is.
I mean, if you want to plant Chris Pratt in my head, then I'll agree with you. You know, but that's not what I originally heard.
Okay. I don't know what it is. It's something, one of the Peter Parkers, maybe. Maybe it's the middle one.
The Andrew Garfield.
Maybe.
You know, I've seen.
Can you hear that a little?
A little bit.
I'm annoyed by this because it won't leave.
Yeah, okay, and I can't get Richard Madden out of my head, and he doesn't sound anything like that, but I keep seeing his face.
I made a little mashup for you guys about the Mr. Wards. Check this out.
Mr. Ward!
Mr. Ward!
I love that. That is Fran. That's fantastic.
I'm telling you.
Fran-freaking-tastic.
Fran-freaking-tastic.
That character's better the longer you listen to him. All right, here he is again.
You do not die easy, do you, Mr. Ward?
It grew on me. I don't know why it grew on me, but it did.
Sure.
All right, his wheezing laugh was weird. Check this out. See, he's just breathing that on that kid.
Was that Jeff Bridges?
Yeah, that was Jeff Bridges. Yeah. He was laughing at the...
when they're on the mountain and Mr. Ward shows up.
Oh, right, yeah. Right.
I can't remember what he was laughing at, though. It was something to do with the...
He's laughing that he's found out he's a witch. He's like, you're part witch. Right. That's hilarious.
Because his mom's a witch and he has the medallion. That's what it was.
Well, spookin' up. Half witch. Hilarious.
Hilarious. All right, here's the thing with... I just wrote this made me laugh. It's a line that actually made me laugh.
You must never have more than one sip of this a day.
Why not?
Because it is mine.
That made me laugh.
It was funny, and I wish this movie just had more one-liners.
Yeah.
Like, that.
Yeah.
Those were some good jokes. Yeah, he had some good dad jokes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
He's the, you know, he's the stereotype of the disheveled old wizard type, in this case, witch hunter, who's, you know, Gandalf-y as hell and a little bit off and likes to drink. But when it comes down to it, he's ready to go. And then also he's got a deep, dark story that he never tells you because he's always, you know, cracking wise. Yeah. But he kind of worked on me after a while. All right, here's some nonsense.
Mysterium tremendum et fascinans.
Yeah, that's some bullshit there. Some real bullshit there.
Sure.
And they could have played it as a joke, too. He could have turned and said, I'm just kidding.
He totally could have, but they did not. All right, here is this. It's the Film Sack checklist. British, German, and Swedish actors being all American and shit? Check. Some of the best fantasy effects of the last 20 years? I'm going to go ahead and say check. I thought they were really
pretty good. Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
That guy looked like Goro from Mortal Kombat? Check. All right. Way better than Goro, though, to give them credit. He was all right.
Yeah.
Star Trek connections. Got to be one or two here.
So only one, but then this other thing that's huge.
All right.
So there's only one cast member who's a Star Trek connection, and that's a person in the cast named Fraser Aitchison. Fraser Aitchison. Okay. And they played, they got credited as Grave Robber.
Oh.
So, like, not even a speaking role.
Okay. Were there when were the Grave Robbers? I don't remember that.
This person played a bit character called Hyder in Star Trek Beyond.
Okay.
That's it. That's the whole cast.
That's it.
However, I want you to know the crew that made Star Trek Beyond also made this movie.
Oh.
The entire freaking crew.
Really?
The art director. Same art director for these two movies. Visual effects coordinator. Two concept illustrators. The lead animator. The gaffer. It's the entire crew that made this movie made Star Trek Beyond. So what a Star Trek connection, you know?
Mm.
These guys are all... They're obviously a unified company. Like, they have to
be
to have this
sold as a set.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Get the whole set.
Like, the set costumer, the set designer, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's the same company.
Well, That's hilarious. I love that. That's my favorite Star Wars or Star Trek new movie. I love that one.
Yeah, it's real good.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Better than that second one.
That second one was terrible. First one was fine.
First one's fine.
It's fine. It's okay.
But the second one, like, I just wish they hadn't shoehorned in anything. Like, just come up with a new story.
Yeah, which is why I like 3. Because 3 was a new story, and I know it performed the least, but this is the problem. The things that true fans want, they don't do very often. They have to do what pleases everyone. I hate that about Hollywood.
Speaking of just film set connections, we don't have a lot in like the director area, but there is one. The assistant art director on this film is a person named Laurel Bergman, and we previously saw assistant art direction by this person in 2012 and in The A-Team.
Oh. Huh. Great.
In case you were feeling like some of the writing felt the same as other film psych movies, this writer, Matt Greenberg, also wrote Reign of Fire and The Prophecy 2.
Reign of Fire is awesome. Prophecy 2.
Yeah. Not so much.
A little bit of a mixed bag. All right. Let's get to the... where was I? Oh, I just did those one things. Let's get to the soundtrack grade. I'd give this a I for intense. I really liked the score by Marco Beltrami. Mm-hmm. I think that guy knows how to make epic fantasy scores. Anything wrong with this movie is not that guy's fault. It's very nice.
Right.
Yeah. I agree. I totally agree.
He did a great job on all kinds of stuff like Hellboy and World War Z, iRobot. Like, you've heard him many, many times, and he's always very good.
And sometimes is called upon to give you a score where you're going to like remember the music a little bit, or like you're more likely to remember the music.
Yeah.
Like there's some scoring. He did the score for Free Solo, the documentary Free Solo.
Oh, I like Free Solo.
And if you go back and rewatch that movie and listen to the music, it's pretty good. Like it really sets the tone in a lot of spots.
If you haven't seen that, that's worth seeing. It's the dude climbing the...
Yeah, the Mount El Capitan. Oh, so good.
I think it was the first thing I watched on Disney Plus when it came out. Like, the very first thing I saw. I didn't see anything else. No actual Disney or Marvel or DC Star Wars things. I went straight to a documentary about a free climber.
That's great.
Weird. I loved it, though. Oh, man. I think that was did you recommend that once? Way back on TMS.
That was a recommendal for sure.
Yeah, I think that was one of my favorites you'd ever done.
And by the way, if you're rewatching Free Solo, I have this bit of advice for anybody who's rewatching Free Solo. Maybe don't listen to me right now if you've never seen it and you're going to watch it.
Yeah.
But when you rewatch it, make it in your mind, make it a movie about the girlfriend and not about the guy.
Oh, she is fascinating.
It is. Yeah. It is such an interesting movie if you're like, oh, she's the main character.
Yeah. It's really interesting. Also, for those who wish it was just Yato, and Han Solo being unfrozen from his carbonite. I can't see anything. Chewie, I can't see. It's not that. All right? Just letting you know.
Thanks for clearing that.
You bet. That's what I'm here for. No problem. Let's get to the Twitter post. This is where you guys sum this damn thing up in 280 characters or less. Let's start with Randy.
Seventh Son. Have enough years passed since the Lord of the Rings movies that you're left longing for a great fantasy film that has people using magic and big castles and feels kind of Middle English? Well, look no further than Warcraft by Duncan Jones.
Yep. There you go. Did we make it? I think Dunaway made it clear at the top of the show we had to push because we thought it was streaming somewhere and it wasn't. And so that's why no Warcraft this week. So I think Dunaway did a bang-up job.
On Hulu Premium.
Yeah. You did a good job, though, of like slotting in a thing that felt like Warcraft.
Yeah.
So well done. Yeah. I thought you did a good. Usually we'll replace with something totally different, but this felt like a nice little. I don't know.
I felt like we needed to honor the Warcraft. Yeah.
You were like Indiana Jones with a bag of sand swapping out the idol.
And then I got chased with a boulder and had to watch this shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, look no further than Warcraft by Duncan Jones.
Next up, Brian Dunaway's turn.
Seventh Son, you fight me as a CGI dragon and not as a man? Have you no honor? Should have stayed a CGI dragon. Repurposed just like this movie. Oh. Hashtag overstotum.
I was going to say, look what you did.
You took, for your own enjoyment.
Yeah,
for your own enjoyment.
Whatever that even means, by the way.
Ogre scrotum,
What would you do with an ogre scrotum for your own enjoyment? Ugh.
I don't want to know.
I don't either. Mm. Finally, Brian Ibbett.
Seventh Son, give me back my amulet, you witch. It really tied the room together.
Aww.
Aww.
Lebowski.
That's right. Julianne Moore was also in Big Lebowski.
Yeah,
right?
She was.
Yeah. Where's the money, Lebowski? Yeah. Putting his head in the toilet. Have you ever seen the video of that weird Lithuanian church baptisms of babies where they dunk them in and they put the audio of Lebowski getting dunked in the toilet while they're doing this thing with the babies? No. You have to see that. It is so funny.
That's hilarious.
It is so funny. And the way they time it, it's almost like the priest is saying, "Where's the money, Lebowski?" And then they're just dunking this poor kid. You have to see it. It's so good. I'll find it. I think it's that church that's featured in Seinfeld where George joins it for a bit. Latvian Orthodox,
right,
whatever.
I think
it's that. Anyway, I'll find this clip because you'll die. It's so good. All right. Let's see. Oh, alternative titles. Holy shit. We can't go a show without one of these. Hold on. Okay, here it is. It was almost called True Shit. You know, like True Grip, but shit. So you can get it.
Oh, gotcha. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Or Harrington Interrupted. All right, moving on.
Oh,
yeah. I was trying to write an alternate title, and all I could come up with for this joke thought was the first six sons were rubbish.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know why. I just think that's so freaking funny.
Yeah. What a snub to the first six kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a snub. Moving on to emails. This is where we read emails. And they're from you at home. Filmsack@gmail.com. Kevin McVicker wrote in. He says, "Hey, Scott, Brian, Randy, and Brian, and Brian."
Hi.
This is a thing now. People do this.
A lot of Brians.
Yeah. He says, "First, thanks for making such a highly enjoyable podcast." Well, you're welcome. Number two, I'm glad you brought up the rocket deflection scene in the transporter trailer that didn't make it into the final cut.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It says, "I remember my buddies and I were excited by the trailer when this movie first came out, and especially me because of that scene. I saw the ridiculous action and hoped it would be that movie on that level, basically Commando, just pure dumb fun action. Mm-hmm. While I wasn't entirely let down after watching the movie, I remember a clear sense of disappointment because I didn't see a rocket deflected with a breakfast tray.
Yeah.
When I talked about my disappointment, people treated me like I didn't know what I was talking about and had made up the scene. If I'd found the trailer online, the person I was trying to show would lose interest because I had to update Real Player or QuickTime. I don't think I've ever had an up-to-date copy of either of these two programs. Luckily, the DVD proved me right. Of course, it's on YouTube now. But still, nobody cared, and honestly, it isn't something worth caring about now. But I did, and you guys bringing it up gave me some catharsis on the subject. Maybe I'm not alone. Thank you. Third, keep sacking.
Nice.
Kevin, that's really great.
Oh, I love that. That's so great.
Yeah. I do love that.
Hold on, I can prove it. Oh, do I have to sit here while you update Real Player?
Yeah, that was great. Thank you, Kevin. That was an amazing email. We got one quick one from John G. as well, who says, "Hello, Scott and Brian and Brian and Brian." Where's Randy in there? Anyway, I just wanted to gently push back on something Brian said a few times on the show.
Oh, fine. Which one first?
You. It's for you. It says, "It's totally fine not to like how Bob Dylan sings or Tom Waits sings, but it's simply not true that they can't sing. They have a distinct vocal style, which I like. I think the vocal style of both lends to something that to the lyrics that you appreciate. This is especially true of Waits, who adds a performance to his songs in how he sings them, and that scratchy voice punctuated by yelling parts until his voice breaks lends itself to the melancholy of the songs. There's a pleading sound of the way Bob Dylan sings lyrics that fit the era he wrote them in and in the meaning behind those lyrics. When somebody like Adele does the Waits cover, it's a version of the song, and I can like it too, but it's also missing something. You can also..."
I don't think that was the point. I remember this.
Well, let me finish this email, and then you get. Then we'll discuss it.
Finish the email, then I'm going to rip it to pieces.
This is what you view as being able to sing. It just isn't being able to sing in the absolute most common way, says John G. All right, Brian, rebuttal.
No, I have no problem whatsoever with the way Bob Dylan sings or the way Tom Waits sings. I love both of them as singer-songwriters. I think that, number one, neither one of them would make it, you know, if they were introduced today, they'd have a much harder time rising above all of the fluff that we're so used to hearing on the radio and that sort of thing. But I also I appreciated their music more after I heard other people perform their music and translate them into into new adaptations. And, but I'm a huge fan of Tom Waits and Bob Dylan. Oh my God.
And remember, we were talking about movies and the same sort of thing. We were just talking about this like an hour ago. The same sort of thing, which is if you took everything about Bob Dylan's music and replaced Bob Dylan with someone who was an objectively more clear singer, right?
Sure. Yep.
You would then hear the Bob Dylan cover later and go, wow, he ruined that song. He tortured. <He's> tortured.
Yeah. You know what? That's a really good, that's a good.
Right. So and if it's week one of American Idol and you've got the James Hungs and everybody else on week one of American Idol and you bring in somebody named Bob Dylan no one's heard of before and he sings, you are not going to have him go on to Hollywood. Right. It just isn't happening.
You're not going to Hollywood, dog.
It's not a complaint overall. That's the main thing I want to get across. Yeah. Like, it's not a complaint when we say, wow, this, this remake of this movie is so much better or so much worse than the original. We can't help it. We saw the original first, you know,
that's true.
That's locked in your mind as the original, the thing that you're comparing to.
Sure.
And it's not necessarily a complaint. It's just a really funny observation.
Yeah. I feel like it all depends on who defines singing. And, you know, I don't think Brian was ever trying to define what singing is. But if you take it and match it up with what people think is a good voice, like, I don't know. Adele's not even a good example. Like, I'm trying to think of somebody with a traditional voice.
Adele's a good example, but like a Taylor Swift or if you're a fan, a Mariah Carey. I'm not, but
Jessica Simpson at her prime.
I've never heard a Jessica Simpson song. Is that weird? I've never heard one. No, not even.
She was a good singer. Like at her prime, she had some chops.
Well, so I'm thinking like even classically trained, you know, like certain vibrato and levels and like all that. Like if you're going to compare it to that, well, sure, they couldn't be more different. But part of what makes the Beatles, the Beatles, Tom Waits, Bob Dylan is they have a sound that is 100% uniquely their own. And they had a message to say that nobody else was saying. And to me, that's the greater achievement. So I don't think even think it was a negative thing. It's just, you know, it's just where they come from.
Bob Dylan's voice with the lyrics, with the things that he was singing about. And it's like, oh my God, so much more powerful than if you were distracted by a honey smooth Whitney Houston voice delivering that song.
Like, right. Like, and those, they all have their place, but yes, I think that's it.
Yeah.
I feel like the history of Brian Ibbett podcasting is, keeps telling this story over and over, which is, that, you know, a cover is not a special thing. A cover is just a thing. And like, imagine if all Bob Dylan songs in the 60s had been recorded by the Beach Boys. You can imagine that. Like, you can really imagine that. Like, he was a songwriter and he was behind the scenes and nobody knew his name. And he just handed these songs over to the Beach Boys and then they recorded those songs. And then, you know, years go by. And I don't know, Jimmy Buffett comes along and does a cover, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? Like that's a timeline and you would have that in your head, you know, and that's all you would know to talk about. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's your reference point. Yep. It's like True Grit. The old one sucks. New one's better. Take it. Take that, everybody. I said it. I said it. All right. Moving on. Hey, a quick note. People who are part of our world now know that we are supported on Patreon, and you guys have really bellied up lately. It's been insane. Coming up soon, you'll be getting some of you at the top level will be getting some art in the mail drawn by me. I'm not going to spoil what it is, but it is FilmSack related. Let's just say that.
Look at this.
I'm also in charge of our July special episode for the month, which I will be working on here soon. So we're only halfway through the month, but we're getting there. So watch for all of that stuff. If you're like, man, I want in on this. No problem.
Get artwork?
Well, Brian, let me tell you. You go to patreon.com/filmsack and you get all sorts of stuff, including always an ad-free show, always a pre-show, a bonus chunk every week. That's every week, no matter what level you are, you get those two things I just mentioned. And if you're at the higher levels, you get even better stuff. So go check it all out, patreon.com/filmsack. Our next movie is going to be a watch-along.
Yeah. Okay.
It's not really a movie.
No.
We're watching a TV show, specifically an episode of what's it called?
Baywatch.
What's that short-lived show that was on during
TV show where they watched Bays called Bay something?
Yeah, Bay something. Anyway, that's next week because Brian Ibbett is going to be doing a big charity ride on a bike and will not be here. So we wanted to make sure we had some content that day, and that's what we'll have. So one of our famous watch-alongs coming up next week, and you'll be able to watch along with us because we'll tell you all the info then about where to be and how to pause and all that stuff. So watch for that.
How to pause.
Do you know how to pause? Those two lines right next to each other. The two little rectangles. And then the little play button.
How to pause, bro?
Have you seen a play button? It's like a triangle on its side. Oh, no, wait a minute. Yeah, it is on its side. Anyway.
I am excited about our next movie, but I don't want to name it just yet. I'm going to pull a Johnson here. I'm excited about our next movie.
That's okay, because who knows? It may get pulled for us, so it's better to not say just yet. We never know. Anyway, filmsack.com. In the meantime, we'll get you to everything. Again, patreon.com/filmsack. Big thanks to everybody supporting us over there. filmsack@gmail.com for our emails. And follow us on Twitter @filmsack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Ogre scrotum?
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
I love that.